And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Lights out, and away we ayo, and get along, little darling!
Yes!
Welcome to No Breaks, a Formula One podcast from the No Dunks Inc. Classic Factory, proudly a part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Whether you're joining us live in the Slipstream team here on YouTube, listen to the podcast later. Thank you very much. I'm your host, Trey Kirby, and I'm joined today by our local F1 expert and a man who said he would do this whole episode in character. Graydon Gordian.
Wow, there, folks. It is right mighty fine to see y'all here today. I don't know if I could do the whole thing.
Yeah, good enough. Honestly, I feel like for a guy that grew up in Texas, I feel like I haven't heard you do a lot of Southern accents.
I can do a Texas accent.
I can do one.
Gosh darn it now.
And, of course, we got our team principal on the pit wall making the right calls. JD, you got a good Southern accent over there?
If I turn my mic on. No, I don't.
That would have been unexpected, but a fun curveball if you had just dialed in Southern accent.
Yeah. I've been living in the South for 9 years, and I got nothing. My kids, though, full Southern.
They sound like absolute country bumpkins.
They sound like Atlanta hipsters.
Right.
Which is a very fine line.
They are who
very,
we thought they
fine
were.
Line.
Yeah, I definitely notice a dad. When I hear from my kids, daddy.
Yeah. I'm a y'all man, and I always have been. That stuck with me.
You've always been a y'all man. I waited 2 years of living in the South before adding it to my vocabulary.
It never went away. That's too ingrained growing up in Texas. Moving around the North in various places. You don't lose the y'all.
I think it's easier if you're an American to adopt the y'all. Mm. It's harder for Canadian. I love y'all, though.
It's a great, yeah.
It's so inclusive. Yeah. It's
very inclusive.
Hey, y'all.
Yeah, y'all means all, my friends.
It never feels right coming out off my tongue. I say it all the time, but it feels like I'm pretending. I'm a big pretender over there.
I still feel like I think about it before I say it every time. I'm always thinking, all right, say y'all instead of you guys, because you guys my go-to.
You guys is what, the go-to.
That's a very Midwestern, you guys.
Yeah, for sure.
So yeah, y'all. We're saying y'all these days, and y'all are here with us. To recap everything from the United States Grand Prix down in Austin, Texas. Starting with Quali on Saturday, did anything cool happen, Graydon? I don't know because I was in the mountains and I only caught the highlights.
Qualifying was good. I think probably the main story from qualifying that was a little bit under the radar, I think they kind of pressed down a little bit, was should Max Verstappen have even made it out of Q1 because they were handing out, you know, track penalties, deleting lap times. Zhou Guanyu, you know, suffered a, you know, didn't end up making it to Q3 because of that. But Max on his final lap, the lap that would have gotten him into Q2, definitely went off the track, and they didn't call it. So that there was a few people who were mad online about that. I guess I kind of wish they had called it just for fairness' sake. They called it on a bunch of other guys. You know what I mean? So I get, you know, but is what it is. Other than that, I mean, it was. You know, you had a lot of people taking grid penalties. Charles, drove great. Well, his last lap was actually a little mediocre, but he was, you know, would have been on the front row were it not for that. Sergio would have been on the second row were it not for some penalties. So he ended up having Carlos and Max out front and both the Mercedes right behind him. I think it set the stage for what was going to be and turned out to be an exciting race.
Yeah, it was an exciting race and a dry race. Maybe that went hand in hand, but it was very cool to see. And yeah, track limits did end up being a little bit of a storyline, I feel like, throughout the weekend. Things that stuck out to me about Quali, Sainz won Q1, Leclerc won Q2, and then they finished P1 and P2 in Q3. Obviously, Leclerc did have the 10-place grid penalty, so he started a little bit lower. Then you had Verstappen and Perez in the second row. Perez gets dropped due to a grid penalty as well, so you had an all-Merc second row. Looked like we were going to have a spicy race coming to Sunday. So let's take a look at the point scores from the race on Sunday. Up top, Max Verstappen takes home his 13th win of the season, tying Michael Schumacher and Sebastian Vettel for most wins in a season. Still got a few races left to break that record. He was not super enthused about it, though, because he realizes they're racing more often. So shout out to him for actually realizing that. That was hilarious.
Yeah, I appreciate his, like, respect.
Yeah, he's like, I'm going to break it, but that's okay because I'm racing more often. So he finishes P1. Lewis Hamilton finishes in P2, led the race with, what, up until about 6 laps left or something like that?
Yeah, it was 5 or 6 laps.
Even got a message from Bono. It's hammer time. That was great to hear.
I love the hair and that. I'm not going to say it's our first hammer time of the season because there's been a lot of races and a lot of radio messages, but we definitely hear that a lot less often than seasons prior.
Yeah. It definitely felt like you're going to do it this time, man. They were fired up for the race.
I kind of thought they were going to do it. I actually thought they had nailed the strategy and had gotten it right. I thought they were going to do it. I thought, he had a solid lead, a solid gap, maybe 6-7 seconds on Max. Max had pitted a lap or two after him, but had come out on mediums. Hamilton was on the hards, and Max was putting in better lap times to start out, but he was on the softer tires. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I think, and they had, a good 20 laps to go, 18 to 20 laps to go at that point. I was like, I don't know that Max's tires are going to be there when it comes time to do the thing and overtake him. I think Mercedes made the right call, and they are going to have – he's going to eat into the gap right now, and then he's not going to have the pace to get past him. I was wrong about that. I was wrong, but I was like, Mercedes is nailing this. I thought they had it all figured out.
So. Yeah, it looked like it – it looked like it definitely could have been a Mercedes victory. They had the strategy on point. You had that really slow stop for Verstappen, which put him
that
even
was obviously
farther
a
behind.
Huge,
so
huge difference.
You're like, luck-wise, things are kind of going Mercedes' way here. But the Red Bull was honestly just too fast, especially with Verstappen behind the wheel. Leclerc did finish P3, but the big news up top is that Verstappen's win gives Red Bull a double championship. That he's the driver's champion, and he had... the team has scored enough points now to give Red Bull the Constructors' Championship as well. They actually didn't get the Constructors' title last year. That went to Mercedes, so this is the first one for the Red Bull team since 2013 on an emotional weekend for them. Very cool. Also in the points, Sergio Perez finished P4. I'll just run through this real quick, JD. Russell P5, Norris P6, Vettel 7th, Magnussen 8th on a one-stopper, Yuki Tsunoda 9th, and Esteban Ocon jumps up to 10th place after a penalty sent Fernando Alonso down from 7th, I think he finished, right? Finished 7th, but he got knocked down due to some shenanigans we'll talk about here in a little. Dominating season, though, for Red Bull. Started out pretty close with Ferrari, but as we saw with Verstappen coming from behind, had to pass Leclerc, had some cool moments, I thought.
Yeah.
Those two going up against each other. Had to pass Hamilton. He finally did so with about 6 laps left. Pretty cool that they actually got to battle against each other. But Max is just too fast.
We've talked about this before, how even when things go wrong for Red Bull, they're just so dominant and the car is so fast and Max is so talented that it kind of doesn't matter. This is yet another example of that, a catastrophic pit stop that for plenty of teams, Ferrari and Mercedes included, would have absolutely ended a bid to end up on the top step.
Yeah.
Ends up, not being a huge issue for Red Bull. They're just that much better than everybody. And just on race day, you even mentioned how excellent Ferrari was in qualifying, but that's on fresh tires with low fuel. Their car is so well optimized for pace, for managing tire degradation, for running with a full tank and maintaining and picking up pace as it lessens and lessens. They really nailed this car, and they are deserving champions. No two ways about it.
Yeah, no two ways about it. They were great. And like you're saying, Mercedes nailed the strategy, got a little bit lucky with what it ended up being, probably a 12-second stop for Verstappen when they were taking a long time.
And the safety cars helped him out a little bit too. Both Mercedes and Ferrari got lucky with the safety cars. Leclerc, very lucky, getting a very cheap pit stop and jumping him way up the grid from where he probably would have been. But also Mercedes just repeatedly bunching up the field helped them keep it close. That was because earlier Max was probably driving away, and that would have, if you hadn't had those safety cars, he wouldn't have been, you know, Lewis wouldn't have been in the neighborhood when the time came. So
yeah, but you hit on it there for Ferrari as well. Leclerc did get pretty lucky with one of the well-timed pit stops with regards to the safety car. And, you know, he drove pretty well, started P12, finished P3, but, I mean, we're talking about Verstappen here taking a, you know, an almost 20-second pit stop and still winning by 5 seconds. So, a good one from Leclerc. Not as exciting, though, for Carlos Sainz. Started on pole, unfortunately didn't make it past the first lap of the race after George Russell locked up trying to send it down the inside, couldn't handle it, knocked Sainz out of the race, ended up being a 5-second penalty for Russell. There was some talk on the broadcast that this might be a turn one, lap one, we're going to let it slide thing. That wasn't the case with Russell getting the penalty there. You think that was the right call?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I mean, he was pretty at fault there. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, Sainz is on the racing line, you know, coming around, and Russell really just, you know, kind of spears him in the back there. So I think it's that's something where even in the beginning of a race, some responsibility needs to be held there. As Martin Brundle said to Trey Cool, before, you know, he asked him, is this going to be a boulevard of broken dreams today? And I think for Carlos Sainz, that was that, you know, that prognostication came true.
Do you think they fed Brundle the lines there?
Do you think Brundle, like, knew that
he had multiple Green Day lines, like titles in a question?
Or is Brundle, like, a Green Day fan?
A huge fan.
Mega fan. All I will say is Brundle has met very famous people, more famous people than Trey Cool, like meaningfully, and had no goddamn idea who they were or what to ask about or why they were there. That has happened. I mean, last year at this race, that was the whole Megan Thee Stallion fiasco, you know, with him like getting into an argument with her security guard. Yep. He's done this repeatedly, so for him to know so specifically like Green Day lyrics to quote and like work into his questions, somebody in that booth, like somebody on the production team, is a big fan and had to be like juicing him up for that.
It was incredible. There was like, he just like, kept going for references, multiple in one sentence. That was next level, and probably the smoothest interaction, I would say, during Brundle's grid walk this time. The Brad Pitt stuff was pretty hilarious.
Yeah, that was kind of a sad moment. Brad Pitt's like just clear, like aggressive, just a total disinterest in interacting with Martin Brundle. I just could not have cared less. Which shocks me a little bit. Okay, I get it's Brad Pitt, and Brad Pitt's a true A-lister, like the dictionary definition of an A-lister. But if you're even the least bit of an F1 fan, even as a celebrity, and I'm on the grid and Martin Brundle comes up to me, I'd talk to him. I'd be like, oh, this is like a part of this show. This is a thing they do every week. I'd want to have fun with it and want to participate in that part of the broadcast. But Brad Pitt wanted no piece of that.
You know who would have stopped and talked? Sly Stallone.
Sly.
You know,
Sly,
big time.
Big time.
Do you think that Brad Pitt is going to get more info from F1 teams than Sly Stallone did when he was trying to make Driven?
He's definitely in the mix. I mean, he's up in all of these places. He had dinner, apparently, with Lewis Hamilton and Toto Wolff and Stefano Domenicali on Saturday night.
You think you ordered a pumpernickel toast?
Do you think maybe they got it? I don't know.
Pitt,
I wonder
with
if old Eddie V's in Austin, Texas, where they – my wife, when she heard that, she said, you're telling me they can't go to a better restaurant than Eddie V's? Which I thought was kind of a diss because Eddie V's is perfectly fine, but I also get what she means.
I hope the proprietors of Eddie V's aren't listening to this.
Yeah, sorry.
Man, Brad Pitt was all over the place. He better be getting better info than Stallone did because he was on the grid walking around. They showed him behind some screens on the paddock. He was on pit wall. He seemed to have carte blanche to go wherever he wanted.
Apparently, this movie they're making, which
top secret
is a fictional film. It's not like Drive to Survive, like it's a documentary. So but it will take place at actual F1 weekends, and all of the people, the cast of characters of F1, will like be making cameos, and they will be shooting a lot of scenes at the races themselves. So I guess they're going to be pretty involved.
Yeah.
That sounds like logistically like a hot mess to me to try to shoot a movie amidst an actual F1 race, but I guess if anybody can pull it off, it's Brad Pitt.
Yeah, it's Brad Pitt. Well, I also think Tom Cruise could pull it off. That's just
touché.
Me, though. I
will those say... are two. There might even be a variety of people in Hollywood who could pull it off.
Yeah, there are several. Those included. We're not limited to those
perhaps.
Two.
Yeah.
I will say a little bit of a muted celebrity presence, I thought.
Yes, agreed.
For the United States Grand Prix compared to what we've seen in years past. Shaq did a cool arrival.
Yeah.
I think Florence Pugh was there. Ed Sheeran was around.
Ed Sheeran was around.
And Tim Cook was the flag waver.
Yeah, Tim Cook, who, terrible flag waver.
He
so
wasn't giving
lifeless,
much.
So, no, not giving it the full beans at all. Could seem so very
third
unenthusiastic.
Beans, maybe.
Yeah, very seemed very unenthusiastic about it. Yeah, Ed Sheeran, they went to several times, you know, because he seemingly was one of the only guys around.
Yeah.
I was a little surprised at that. I thought this would be a bigger celebrity event.
It was a huge deal last year. Maybe Miami stole the show this year.
Yeah.
If you're a celeb, that's probably the one you're going to this year. Las Vegas will be the one next year.
You know, but Austin is also kind of a celeb town.
True.
In the sense it's a party town and like a film town. But yeah, it's Miami didn't eat into attendance at all. This was the most attended F1 event in history with over 440,000 attendees. So that's, I guess, exciting, and Miami hasn't cut into that at all, but I think you might be right that on the celebrity front, it did eat into it.
One guy who was on the track had an interesting day was Fernando Alonso. Ooh. One of the craziest scenes we've seen in a Formula One race recently, when Fernando Alonso hit Lance Stroll in the back, which popped Alonso's car up for a long wheelie, almost Fast and Furious style here.
Yes.
Going on his back axle. This eventually led to a 30-second penalty for Alonso because he landed so hard from his car getting elevated like that it loosened one of the mirrors, which eventually blew off from the high speeds.
So I'm going to call – right, and I'm going to come down strongly on the justice for Alonso side of this. Like, to be direct, I think that was – this penalty is bullshit. Like, I think it's – okay, there – I get why Haas – protested it after the race because Haas looked at what was happening with Sergio Perez's car where there was part of his front wing dangling off and Alonso's mirror dangling and flying off and said, we have faced the exact same situation with Kevin Magnussen multiple times and we've always been shown the meatball flag, the black and orange flag. What the hell? Why aren't you showing it here? That is a fair complaint from Haas because I think that's right. It wasn't equitable, and they probably were right to be pissed. But at the same time, that's on the race director to show him that flag and to be the steward. If they screw up in real time in the race, that I don't see why you apply that a penalty afterwards. Well, what are they supposed to – I don't know. It's like that to me is a bad penalty. I don't like this for Alonso. I think he should have ended in the points because he had an incredible drive. He came back from that insane incident. Somehow the car continued going. I have no idea how they managed to keep the car even on the track. And then after falling way down the grid during that whole incident, managed to drive it all the way back into the points to seventh or wherever.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible that he was actually able to continue because, I don't know, just the impact of the car smacking back down seemed like it would probably put him out of the race. Things are so fragile, but I guess a very strong floor for the Alpine. But you're kind of right. It's like, call it both ways, but do it during the race because afterwards it's kind of like, oh, yeah, we should have caught that.
Well,
Too late, buddy.
Yeah, like after – what if you were watching a basketball game and somebody – scored, but it was an offensive foul. And then, like, after the game is over, they were like, actually, that was clearly a foul. We missed it. We're taking away those 2 points. And it, like, changes the outcome of the game. To me, it feels like that in this instance. Like, it's the ref that blew it. It's the race director that blew it, not Alpine that made a mistake. And they should, and even if there is a problem there, if you want to say, listen, you guys should have been taking driver safety or like course safety more seriously, I think that's a fine for the team, not a penalty for Alonso. That is very extreme, by the way. A 30-second penalty? We see that's a very harsh penalty.
The reasoning basically was that it was supposed to kind of replicate a stop and go penalty in a pit stop, right?
Correct.
Like 10 seconds in, 10 seconds stopped, 10 seconds out. Adds up to 30.
But a meatball actually isn't even a, you know, isn't a penalty. It's an order to come in to the pits, and you do have to likely change the front wing or change. But in that instance, it's not like you'd change the front wing. You'd probably rip off the mirror and then let him keep going is what you would do, right? So I just feel like that this is a mistake. It's also really problematic that they penalized Alpine so harshly and they decided to do nothing about Sergio Perez and Red Bull. And they were like, well, that was fine. He was driving around with part of his front wing dangling off. That's not a big deal. The Alpine thing's a big deal. It just doesn't feel like this is – a lot of people are mad on various sides, and I think they're all right to be mad. Like, I think Haas is right to be mad. I think Alpine's right to be mad.
Do you have to have a mirror on both sides of your car to drive?
Not to continue
not
in
to
the race.
To start?
To start, yeah. For sure. I don't think that's – but I don't think to – clearly not to continue because they let him – they didn't, like, call him in at that point for having an unsafe car. Okay. They let him continue with just one mirror. It is unsafe, I guess, because you can't see people behind you.
True. But you can always just check your blind spot.
Yeah, I guess simple. Just give it a
simple.
Little glance.
Yeah, just take your eyes off the road when you're going 200 miles an hour. No big deal. How about surprises and disappointments? What else stuck out to you from the United States Grand Prix?
What else stuck out? I kind of thought, surprises on the good end. Sebastian Vettel had a great race. He looked great. Aston Martin in general looked really strong despite Stroll's kind of boneheaded move to make a late, you know, swerve in front of Alonso real late. You know, the Aston Martins in general looked good. Vettel looked especially great. Were it also not for a botched pit stop, he would have finished even higher as well because he was driving really well. He's got to be one of the standouts there. I thought Bottas was a little he didn't end up in the points in the end, right?
No.
Yeah, which is a shame that him and Joe didn't, because the Alpha looked really strong in qualifying and looked really strong early in the race and looked like they were poised to get some points. So I thought that was I was a little bit disappointed for them. I thought they had an opportunity. This is a track where they looked strong. They looked strong throughout practice. And then for them to come away with no points is a bummer, I thought.
Yeah, and I think they brought upgrades this week, and they brought upgrades for the previous race as well. So they're probably thinking we're back in the points, so to come home with nothing.
It's a
shame.
That was
a bad one, I thought, for Alfa Romeo.
Anybody on your end?
Disappointment-wise, Daniel Ricciardo, completely invisible in the race, like 30 seconds off the pace from Lando Norris. And didn't go full Americana, I didn't think, the way he usually does for United States Grand Prix.
He had
the sideburns. What was it? Did he have like a horsey McHorse face or something like that?
Well, he had a horse at one point with him.
Yeah, but I don't know. It seemed like the bloom was off the Ricciardo rose a little bit, knowing that he's not going to be necessarily on the grid for next season. And usually he's one of the stars of the show.
Loves Texas. He loves Austin. I think he bought a house there. Mm-hmm. Like, I think, you know, he like loves it, right? So for him to have – it's true. It felt – like almost a little sad that he was kind of muted, because it really drove home the fact that he's not going to be around next year.
Good surprise, though. Kevin Magnussen went for the one-stop strategy for this one. It worked out. Finished P8. First time Haas has been in the points for quite some time. So that was a pleasant surprise, I thought. Kevin Magnussen, nice little race there.
Yeah, great. And great guts to go for the one-stopper. I honestly was fairly positive that would just not work at all.
Yeah,
it would be a fool's errand to even try. So, but you know, they gave it a go, and definitely wouldn't, I think, would not have been in the points if they had done a two-stopper. So that was great. You know,
you think it's important for the American team to get points at a United States Grand Prix? Does it matter?
They just want
points, period.
I'm gonna say that Haas is kidding themselves a little bit if they feel like this is their home Grand Prix. It's not as if you look around the stands and it's just like a sea of Haas fans.
That's true.
I don't think like Gunter Steiner and Kevin Magnussen are sitting around and Mick Schumacher sitting around thinking, this is it. This is our home. this is our house. We have to come in here and defend our house. Like, we must protect this house, you know? Like, I don't think that's their attitude coming in.
Well, they're probably saying we must protect this house.
Mick is a... How about that? How about that? Mick is a Texas man. Mick's got... What? The Schumachers have a big ranch in Texas. His dad loved Texas back when he could travel, I guess. And Mick has spent a lot of time there as a kid growing up, I think.
You think he has a cowboy hat?
I assure you. I think he's in one. There's photos flying there. They were at the Broken Spoke in Austin. Him and, you know, Magnuson and somebody else. They were at the Broken Spoke together. So they were, you know, so – and he had a cowboy hat on. So he's looking good.
It's very easy to actually find a picture of Mick Schumacher wearing a cowboy hat.
Yeah, you go and there's like 13 different pictures.
Yeah, he's worn a lot of cowboy hats.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they spend a lot of time in Texas, or they did once upon a time.
Only one thing left to do, Graydon. It's a hand out our Full Beans Driver of the Weekend Award for the United States Grand Prix down in Austin, Texas. Nice to have a dry race. Pretty interesting strategy-wise. We had a whole bunch of different drivers actually getting a chance to lead this race. So where are you going, Graydon?
Okay, yeah, we did have a bunch of drivers. And okay, I forget which race it was. Maybe it was Singapore, but a couple of weeks back where I was saying how I don't even feel like – I think we gave it to Sergio because it felt like nobody else even had a good race. Everybody had a mediocre race. I actually felt the opposite about Austin. Like a bunch of guys actually drove pretty well. You know, that a bunch of people stood out. You mentioned Magnuson stood out. I actually think Alonso had a great race. I think Leclerc had a very nice race. For me, the standout guy is – Sebastian Vettel in his final race. I thought he drove great. His overtake of Magnuson right there coming into the last couple of corners, you know, before the checkered flag, terrific stuff. I just thought he really looked great out there. Looked like his old self, you know, looked like his championship caliber self, which was so great to see after what has had its more than a handful of forgettable moments in his final year. It was awesome to see him have a good race.
Yeah, definitely has had a downside to the end of his career with the way things happened at Ferrari. Yeah. Maybe not quite as much success as you would expect at Aston Martin, but I will disagree. He doesn't look like his old self because they show pictures of Sebastian Vettel when he came up with Red Bull, and I'm like, they let a 13-year-old drive Formula One?
A tiny, tiny baby. It's incredible, actually, how much he's aged.
Yeah, he's been around for a long time to go from looking how young he did to now looking like the grizzled vet, but he gets my Full Beans Driver of the Weekend as well. Led a lap, which was the 3,500th lap he's led in his career, which is a lot of laps.
The other one we didn't mention, who I think deserves a shout-out, although I stand by my giving the award to Vettel, is Lewis drove a great race. Lewis drove a great race, too, and it was, you know, even just getting second there, it's, listen, I get it's disappointing. I really wanted him to get the win. I was pulling really hard for him. It would have been awesome, but so hard against Max and the Red Bulls, but he drove a very complete, like, zero mistake race. Mm-hmm. There's nothing he could have done better than what he did out there.
Yeah, and I guess we'll see if Mercedes is ever able to bring their new wing that they're trying. Maybe that is the thing that pushes them over the edge to get a win here, because you're hearing that a lot on the broadcast. Only a few races left for Mercedes to get Lewis Hamilton a win and keep his streak of seasons with at least one win continuing. But that's it from the United States Grand Prix. We're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll talk news and we'll answer some questions from some listeners.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Back with the Breaky Boys, a new classic podcast unfurling before your very eyes. Got a little bit of news to talk about here, Graydon. One of the big stories of the weekend at the United States Grand Prix is that Red Bull owner slash co-founder Dietrich Mateschitz passed away this weekend at 78 years old. Mateschitz, one of the founders of Red Bull, the energy drink company, and then obviously instrumental building their Formula One team and the Toro Rosso, now AlphaTauri team as well. Graydon, what can you tell me about Dietrich Mateschitz?
Well, I mean, Dietrich was, I mean, he actually, listen, everyone's shown him a lot of love, and I think he deserves a lot of credit for what has been a massive impact on the sport. He took a middling Jaguar team, purchased it, and made it into a powerhouse. You know, he himself, I think, was probably not always the most savory character. Sometimes his politics maybe were a few regrettable remarks sure. over the years. But, you know, we won't focus on that. I think it's just, I mean, listen, he actually, like, he deserves a little bit of credit for, I think, building a company, and I'm talking about Red Bull, not just, that is unlike any other business on the planet. You're talking about an energy drink company that, like, owns soccer teams and racing teams and jumps people out of satellites. And, like, it's yeah. actually, I think sometimes we're just so used to, like, the madness that is the Red Bull empire that when you take a step back, we don't realize that, like, it's the weirdest business on the planet.
Absolutely.
And it works, and they made an absolute fortune building it, taking this incredibly novel strategy. And, like, I don't know, good for him for having, like, a totally crazy, you know, hyper risk-tolerant approach to building this world-famous brand. So, you know, good for him in that regard.
Yeah, they were showing a clip package at one point of all of the other extreme sports that Red Bull teams are a part of, and it was strange to, like, be explaining to the kids. I'm like, oh yeah, so he founded Red Bull, which to begin with is an energy drink company. Don't drink energy drinks, my children.
Right, of course, yeah.
You'll like, never
which
see
you never
one.
Want. Yeah,
you'll
which
never
you
see one
never
in this
touch.
House.
Yeah, exactly.
But he started it, and then they got into racing, and then, oh yeah, they have guys jumping from outer space down to the ground, not to mention the Red Bull Flugtag, which was like the first thing
the
I learned
Flugtag.
Outside of Red Bull energy drinks when they're just flying all kinds of
Did you ever
wild
go,
cars.
You know, they used to have, when we lived in Chicago, they had one there.
Never attended a Flugtag.
I like was like walking by and they were having it on like the beach, like oh, there's that beach over by like Old Town, kind of like Lincoln Park.
Like
area,
a North
where,
Avenue beach,
North
probably.
Avenue beach or whatever. They were like having a Flugtag and I like saw a little bit of it. Anyway, so, but this is a long time. I mean, this is probably like over a decade ago, you know, 12, 13 years ago. But it's, it's just wild. The one thing that we never got a look at during Didi's life that I always wanted to see was, so he famously didn't like to travel
okay.
to the races. He obviously did from time to time, but he wasn't at every race, which, you know, some of the owners are, and that's their whole thing. They own this fancy toy and they travel around and they participate. But supposedly back in Austria at Red Bull headquarters, he had this like massive, like, you know, like criminal mastermind style, like viewing room where it was like huge TVs and he could see all the data and all these things. And it was this like hyper involved lounge where he would watch all the races from. And I've never seen a picture of it. I don't think a photo of it exists, but it does sound like a cool place to watch a race.
Does sound like a cool place to watch a race and kind of a visionary guy. So RIP to Dietrich Mateschitz. Very cool that Red Bull could honor him with a couple of championships this weekend. Other bit of news, Williams Racing Team principal Josh Capito announced that American Formula 2 driver Logan Sargeant would join Williams next year, replacing Nicholas Latifi. However, there are super license concerns. Sargeant must finish sixth or better in the final F2 standings to earn his super license. He's got a 12-point lead currently over the seventh-place driver with one race left. My favorite part of this from an ESPN report is that it's, quote, unclear whether Williams has a backup plan in case Sargeant is unable to collect his super license points, or whether Josh Capito was supposed to make the announcement in the first place. So they're probably getting this guy, and if they don't, we'll see.
It feels like, okay, I'm speculating here, but if the article says It's unclear whether he was supposed to say this in the first place. It sounds to me like that's because they called somebody else at Williams to confirm, and they were like, he wasn't even supposed to say that. Like, otherwise, you would never just question whether a team principal was supposed to make an announcement or not. I feel like that. So somebody must have said he wasn't supposed to say that. And listen, that's – I guess it's all well and good. It does feel – it seems overwhelmingly likely that Logan Sargeant will get the super license points necessary, but it's not certain.
Yeah.
He could easily DNF, and then the guy in seventh currently finishes on the podium or something, and then it's and then he's out. I mean, I don't know. That happens. That stuff happens all the time. It just feels it's not zero risk.
You could just wait.
You could have just waited. You could have just waited. And it does feel like you should, in fact, have a backup plan.
Sargeant got some points, I believe, this weekend for taking some practice sessions with the Williams team. This is another young driver who is getting brought up to Formula One. I feel like we've talked about a ton of young drivers recently. What's the Logan Sargeant scouting report?
I mean, at this point, the real question about this guy is, I think the real bet that Williams is making is that given the explosion in popularity in the of F1 in the U.S., will an American driver be a difference maker? I think it's hard to claim that Logan Sargeant is actually the best guy on the outside looking in of F1 right now. I just don't know if I believe that. Like, I think he's super talented and all. It's great, but finishing sixth in Formula 2 when you look at where some of the current guys on the grid are finishing is not all that impressive given what some of the other guys have done. It definitely feels – I'm not saying it's an odd move, but it and I certainly hope he does well, but it doesn't feel like, well, he was the obvious anointed next choice to take over a seat here.
Definitely not the buzziest name.
Not the buzziest name. I mean, the only reason he's been a buzzy name is because he's American.
Sure.
Like, and that and everybody has been desperate to get an American back in the series.
Did a quick Google. There is one photo only of Logan Sargeant wearing a cowboy hat,
and he's
done it. So
okay, he's done it.
That's good.
It's not the only. I don't know if we didn't have this on our show, but there is one other little piece of Williams news out there.
Give it to
me.
I
might as well mention it. That it does look like we mentioned a few shows back, the Porsche Red Bull deal fell apart, and it's looking like now a Porsche Williams deal is going to come together. That Porsche is going to buy
no
a 50.
What, huh?
They're getting in. They're going to buy a. It looks like my understanding is, as of this recording, there is not pen to paper, but apparently there is terms to purchase 50% of Williams and finally get Porsche into the series.
Are you sure you're supposed to announce that at this point?
Should I be announcing that? Should I be saying that out loud?
Hard to say.
Yet
but
another thing that maybe Williams wasn't supposed to be breaking. Yet more news.
Like, don't just put anything out there. Hopefully it all comes true. Yeah. I will say, just quickly off the top of my head, I would say Porsche partnering with Williams better for the sport than Porsche partnering with Red Bull, because that seems like the rich getting richer. Whereas here,
agreed,
you got somebody going to like one of the back markers. Maybe that helps elevate them a little bit.
Agreed. I also think it probably, as long as Porsche plays ball from a branding standpoint, probably safeguards the Williams entry for a longer period of time. You know, I think nobody wants to see, even if it's just in name only. Williams is such an important part of F1 history. I think people want to see the team hang around. Obviously, the Williams family was struggling to make that happen. And now with their kind of private equity owners, seems like they would hang around for a longer time. But I think it's, you know, Porsche is a good, you know, institutional backer to have. So
good to hear during a transitional period for Williams. We're in the middle of a transitional period ourselves because we're going to go to the beach. Beach stepping during a No Breaks podcast. They said it couldn't be done. First question, Greg. This one actually comes from the Slipstream team. A live question from Jeff R, who says, "Graydon, as a native Texan, are you a little offended by the drivers and pundits making a parody of Texan culture? Nobody goes to the French GP wearing berets or Silverstone with dressing as the Queen's Guard." Because I am a little offended. LOL. That's from Jeff R.
Okay. I mean, offended would be a stretch. Offended would be a stretch. You're not wrong, though, that they, like, make way bigger of a deal out of, like, the culture of Texas than they do at any other Grand Prix.
No doubt.
Every other place, they just show up and race. And in Texas, it's all a big – it's a big ordeal. Now, in their defense – Texas Texans, the promoters of the event, lean into this. They are big enablers yes. of that. They want, you know, they want all of this, but they absolutely, without a doubt, like make it a thing in a way where it's not always a thing everywhere else.
Interesting.
I mean, am I wrong? I mean, it feels like...
Oh, definitely. I mean, I guess they did do football helmets at the Miami GP this year, but to me, a football helmet is more Texas than it is Miami, though there are great.
Although they
race
around the Dolphin Stadium.
Also true, yeah.
It's true that football is a very Texan sport. And they do hats in other places. You've seen other headgear.
Russian Grand Prix had Russian F1 hats.
Yeah, whatever those sort of like trapper hats are. Yeah, like those. So you see that sometimes, but you're not wrong. It's like it's horses and it's guys dressing up in cowboy boots. You saw the Ferrari guys in those little like toy cowboy hats, which I actually hated. Not because I was offended as much as I just thought they looked terrible.
Get them a real cowboy hat.
Get a real cowboy hat. My God.
Simple.
Yeah. Just get them a cattleman or
a cutter.
A cutter. You get a ridge top.
You could get a ridge top.
Was that
I wouldn't
get
the gambler. Don't get the gambler.
Well,
it's a bad
look. You gotta watch out for the gambler.
All right, on to the questions that we had before the show started. This one comes from Tim in Scotland. Hi guys, love the pod. First off, what's the F1 equivalent to beach stepping? Grid walking? Pit wall sitting? What's a good term?
Grid walking doesn't sound bad. I mean, that grid walking is where you walk around and ask questions.
Grid walking's pretty good. All right. My question for both of you. Which driver is most likely to be the next first-time world champion? Follow-up question. Which current young driver do you think will finish their career with the most world championships? So next first-time winner and most world championships.
Okay, to the first question, I think there's only two serious contenders as of this date. Charles Leclerc and George Russell, as I think those are the only two teams that are seriously going to vie for a championship in the near future. And I'm going to say Charles. I just think that he's been in the team longer. He's more integrated into it. And Ferrari is a step ahead of Mercedes at this point. They have their arms around the new regs better than they do. As much as I don't think that they should be the betting favorites to win next year, the odds will appropriately be better for them than Mercedes. And if they do win, it'll be because Charles took him to the mountaintop. Even with the mistakes he makes, he is the guy who can put it all together and can compete at that elite level more than Carlos, in my opinion. So if Mercedes turns the corner, then George, the other answer. There's other super talented guys. Lando's super talented, but he's locked into McLaren for a long time, and McLaren doesn't look anywhere close to competing for drivers or constructors' championships. So it's hard to say. To the second question.
Most titles.
I mean, right now the answer's got to be Max. If you're including him among the young, which he is, he's very young, the same age as the rest of those guys. I mean, I don't – if it's not – if we get 15 years on and it's not Max, that's like – that's wild. That's a wild outcome. It means like somebody else really crushed it at
some point.
Do
you think we're looking at – you know, a Sebastian Vettel Red Bull run here for straight, Lewis Hamilton with Mercedes during the hybrid era winning every single championship. Red Bull has been dominant this year. It seems like it's been a close season, but by the end of the year, it ain't going to look like that at all.
No, not at all. I mean, no, it's an incredibly dominant year. It definitely could be. You've seen big regulatory changes have ushered in big periods of dominance, you know, from a team, you know, so that that would not be uncommon. But also, you know, we're coming out of a sort of mega team cycle, like, you know, Ferrari dominating with Schumacher and then Red Bull dominating with Vettel, and then Mercedes dominant with Hamilton. You know, now we're at the beginning of this new era, and it's, but that hasn't always been the way the sport has been, and they're actively trying to discourage that nowadays, right? Mm-hmm. With the cost cap, with other regulatory changes, they are more interested in on-track competitiveness and discouraging that level of dominance. So maybe they'll make changes that make it harder for Red Bull to pull off something quite like that. But he's still got to be.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I don't even think – if we get to the end of their careers and somehow George or Charles or Lando has won more titles than Max, that's that, – I mean, I would say it I would be shocked.
Oh, definitely.
I'd be shocked. You know what I mean? Like, I, you know,
yeah, so. That would be a shocker. But I'm with you. It's got to be Leclerc or Russell to be the next
winner.
Because I don't think – like, Sainz – clear number two. Perez, clear number two. Other than that, you're just guessing.
Next
really.
First time, I mean, other than that, the only difference would be, does Hamilton retire, and then does somebody step up into the Mercedes seat,
sure,
who somehow bests George?
Right.
But that's easier said than done. George is a huge talent. Like, George will be incredibly competitive when the time comes.
Next question came to us from Twitter, from @Brian_Swain, who says, not serious answers only. What non-car brand would you like to see start an F1 team like Red Bull? Cheetos? You could have Chester the Cheetah roaming around the pit lane. Mountain Dew? A bright neon green obnoxious car? Trojan condoms? Could make for a provocative livery. What kind of brand would you like to see start a team in Formula One?
What's the big – oh, Bush's Baked Beans, maybe? Bush's Baked Beans, you know, giving it the full beans.
And it's
a full beans. You just got a whole beans-covered car, like a livery that's just like that thick bean color.
that thick bean color. Yeah,
I mean, I would say a Bush's car would be – pretty. I mean, look at that. What if you had somebody that rich, you know, orangey, like Auburn hue?
They
that
do.
Would be nice.
They do have a NASCAR team, huh?
Do they?
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, let's
Trent
be real.
That Owens. Is
so
the
I would
crew
say
chief.
It's that's not the you said not serious answers only, but maybe I'm dead serious about getting Bush's in.
A brown car that just says Bush's Best Baked Beans on the front. I'm with you. That's the answer. I had other answers, but that's the answer.
Wait, what were your other answers?
My other answer was UPS because I would like to see a brown car. I'm like, brown and yellow looks cool for the Padres.
Okay,
look out there.
Fair enough.
But man, if you can get a straight beans car, that car would win every week.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming they're a United States based brand. So.
Bushes? I'm presuming. I mean, I guess.
Well, yeah. I mean, two of the four forebears became presidents. You know,
right.
George H.W. and George W.
Don't the Brits love baked beans?
They do.
Could be a British brand.
I feel like every British bean I see is a Heinz baked bean. I think Heinz is a United States company as well.
I mean, there you go.
We're getting a bean car is what we're saying.
Okay.
Here. Next question comes from Mohammed7 on Twitter, who says, do F1 drivers ever listen to music in the car during the race?
The answer is no. I think the answer is no. They, back in the early 2000s, back when Sly Stallone was racing, sometimes he would hum to himself.
Oh, the humming.
Right,
yeah,
he would
get
to the humming, and so he would really get in the zone. But other than that, you know, I think no. They do. Some of them listen to music beforehand.
Sure.
They do like that classic athlete, like, I got my headphones on, I'm getting in the zone thing.
But you're telling me nobody's going into Crutchfield
I think they're talking
Pioneer.
To each other
yeah.
a lot.
They are talking a lot. There's a lot of talking going on.
They're talking all the time. And we're only getting a small snippet of the talking. Like, they're talking to each other all the time.
I thought that was funny during the Grand Prix. I think they were talking to Zach Brown. Who, by the way, I actually think Zach Brown was kind of doing a Southern accent for this entire race.
Oh, you think
race.
He was, like, doing
I
a
think
bit?
He was selling
you think
it
he
hard.
Was being like, we're here today. Yeah.
Oh, they're flying down here, buddy. Yeah. But at one point, they asked him if they'd even heard from Daniel Ricciardo yet. And they're like, yeah, he's been pretty quiet now. I'm sure we'll hear from him at some point. So that was funny to me. But obviously, they're not listening to music while they're actually driving. But my question, what would be your go-to driving song if you're out there?
Wow.
A song you wanted to like, hear to really go full beans.
Maybe like some ZZ Top, like some like Tush or something like that. I'm just like, it's a long race. You want to get it. You don't want to like, you want to get in the groove. Like,
sure.
So like, I mean, I could see getting like settling in and really hitting the gas and making it happen out there.
That's not bad. What about you, JD? Yeah. If you were driving a car at 200 miles an hour, what do you want to be listening to?
Phil Collins, Against All Odds. Matty O, our old producer, he swore by that song as a running song. You know, not
yeah,
like
Phil Collins?
The Phil Collins Against All Odds. And God damn it, I was on a treadmill once and it came on and it got me going. It actually pumps you up. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So Against All Odds. Quick correction, guys. Heinz. British company.
What?
Or at least originally.
That's crazy.
But like Heinz of like Heinz Field and like the
I thought they were
the
like
ketchup,
a,
like the ketchup brand?
Yeah, I think so.
Is it the same brand?
I'm looking at Heinz baked beans and yeah, it's H.J. Heinz Company, sold in the UK and other countries. Has been sold as Heinz Beans with a Z, they would say over there.
Zed.
I can't. Maybe it is. I don't know.
Okay. Is the beans company? It's the same as the ketchup company.
Yes, and I think HP sauce and all that as well, right?
Well, they've got 57 varieties. We all know. Only one of them is ketchup. One of them is UK beans. The other 55. It's up for you to figure out.
Are the beans a variety? That's what they're like.
I don't know. There's some debate here about where these beans are located.
Yeah. There's a beans museum, pop-up exhibit
at
Covent Garden.
I thought they were in Pittsburgh. I thought it was based in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Well, they may make them here, but as far as I can see... Let me dig into it more. Okay. You guys carry on. Deep dive into
beans. What are
other... Yeah, what would be your go-to
song? Take It Easy by the Eagles. Running down the road trying to loosen my load.
Okay, yeah.
Seven went on my mind.
Yeah, I get that. I get
very
that.
Very propulsive song. Play it over and over and over.
Yeah. No, you want to just listen to it on repeat.
One song only, yeah. That's how I do it. When I start listening to Take It Easy by the Eagles, it's the only song I want
to
hear.
Until I'm done listening to music.
Until you have to call in somebody to the karaoke room. How do you fix this machine?
Yeah,
it won't play anything.
God forbid it comes
easy.
On early during the road trip. Sorry, kids, for the next 8 hours, it's Take It Easy on repeat.
Great road trip song.
Okay.
Heinz, definitely an American company. I don't know what I was reading.
Okay.
Wikipedia,
so
man.
Not a British
company.
Yeah,
you were right. It was founded in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
But I think maybe the Heinz British baked beans are kind of specific.
Yeah,
so
totally.
That is a,
they must
that,
market
like, a very specific
teal can
thing.
Of beans.
Yeah. That is a very specific yeah. thing. Yeah.
They're
that's
got to
be their number one selling item in the UK.
They just love passing, I mean, British people love beans. They love
They really do.
Beans. They really do. Yeah.
All right. A Heinz baked beans car driven by Lewis Hamilton at the end of his career.
I'm in. I mean, who says no? Who says no?
I'm asking you as if you're going to start the team for us. You in?
I'll pitch
you
about
in?
It. You in?
All right. So that's Beach Steppin'. Send us questions if you've ever got them. NoDunks@TheAthletic.com. Tweet them to me and Graydon. We'll find them somehow.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
We got a race coming up, Graydon, the Mexico Grand Prix, coming up this weekend, I do believe, right? I actually didn't look at the calendar, but
yeah,
this
weekend.
Let's take a look at the standings after quite a few races. Look at gold numbers on both sides. Season's over. Oh, man. Max Verstappen, he's your champion for the drivers and Red Bull Racing. They are your champion for the constructors. Max is followed by Leclerc, Perez, Russell, Sainz, Hamilton, Norris, Ocon, Alonso, and Bottas. Bottas holding it down in 10th. Good job, guy. As for the team standings, it goes Red Bull, Ferrari, Mercedes, Alpine, McLaren, Alfa Romeo, Aston Martin, Haas, AlphaTauri, and Williams. The championships are done, Graydon. Why should we still watch this race?
Because it's going to be good. I love the Mexico Grand Prix.
Okay.
It is. I mean, the fans are great. Yet another locale where I think they're just super fired up. I think it'll be really cool to see if Sergio can get a win. I think the place will go absolutely bonkers if Sergio is on the top step.
He led the Mexican Grand Prix last year. I think he was the first Mexican driver to lead the Grand Prix.
He was, yes, but he didn't end up winning. He ended up on the podium, but he didn't end up winning. It's great, and it's just a great track. It's a super cool, very unique drive, you know, the highest altitude track of the season, which creates a really weird setup for the cars. Mm-hmm. It's actually, they run very high downforce packages, similar to Monaco or Singapore, even though it really is all about straight line speed and power, because they need that additional downforce to get through these corners. It also creates really big challenges for the engineering team, because the air is so thin, it affects the engines and all, mm-hmm. and the brakes and all things in all kinds of weird ways. It also puts a lot of pressure on the drivers themselves with like kind of an oxygen deficient kind of environment. I think people don't realize just how high Mexico City is. Mm-hmm. So all in all, cool. I think it'll be super fun. You're still seeing guys fight for Grand Prix. And I think now we're basically in a part of the season where, you know, this starts to become the prequel to next season.
Sure.
How are guys looking? You saw that in 2020 where you saw, you know, Max take the very last race of the year in the last time that Mercedes got a double title. You know, there you saw him win in Abu Dhabi before the 2021 season, and it kind of set off this, you know, rumors that Red Bull was going to be on another level the subsequent year. And I think similarly here, we're going to get a look at, can Ferrari start to claw its way back? Can Mercedes pull even with Ferrari? What's 2023 going to look like? I think it's all fun to watch, not to mention, you know, people are fighting for Grand Prix wins, which is, you know, something they've always dreamed of.
Yeah,
so
got a couple of little standings things I guess we can keep our eye on. P4 seems to be pretty hotly contested in the Constructors' Championship between Alpine and McLaren. And as for the drivers, P2 is still up for grabs between Leclerc and Perez, only 2 points separating Leclerc from Perez. And that's kind of interesting to me, because you're talking about the number two driver for Red Bull chasing the number one driver for Ferrari. So that will be something to keep your eye on as well.
For sure.
Who is this favoring, you think, between Leclerc and Perez?
You know, this is an interesting one, because they will – I think this probably favors Red Bull, because, you know, it is probably more about straight line speed than, and like the engine power than, you know, a lot of other tracks. I also think, given the high downforce setup that Red Bull's going to run, they're all going to run, but I have worries about tire degradation for Ferrari. I don't think they've solved that, mm-hmm. You know, for their car quite yet. You're even seeing Leclerc struggled with that a little bit at the end of the U.S. Grand Prix. He started the time that Perez had from him, he started taking big chunks out of him at the very end there. And I started to think, oh my God, Perez is going to catch him again, just like the last race, and maybe be putting pressure on him coming into that final, those final laps, just like Japan. So didn't end up happening. But I suspect they might have similar issues. So I think Red Bull's got to be the favorite. Also, I mean, let's be real. Max and Red Bull are, I think, the favorite, track are.
I'm just assuming
he's
going to win the race, interesting to see who comes in second.
It's not, even in some of those really dominant Mercedes years, there were tracks where this was clearly a Ferrari track, this was clearly a Red Bull track, and Mercedes just was on odds, on average the best. That's not even true anymore. It's just like every track, Red Bull was the best from here on out.
All right, so that's this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Got another afternoon race this Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
Since it's here in North America.
We'll have a barbecue. Well, come on. Yeah, let's do it.
Bring your beans.
Bring your beans.
Bring BYOB. Bring your own beans to Grains for a barbecue. I think that's all we got show-wise. Plug time at Mr. Gordian. Follow him
Follow
on
me.
Twitter. You got any good tweets coming up?
I mean, if you do you want to experience the Spurs tank or failure
what,
to tank in
what
real
tank?
Time? What tank? What tank are you talking about? In real time? Then join me as I narrate the Spurs as they fail at tanking.
3-1 so far.
I am loving it.
Who's your favorite San Antonio Spur this season?
I mean, Devin Vassell's been
around
awesome.
A while. Yeah.
He's been awesome. So I mean, he looked really mediocre against the Hornets, but then he's shown a lot of aggression. Shown stuff. You know, Poeltl, my man, has been. He looked great the other. He's been out there. You know, I mean, the way he took on, you know, Rudy and Kat like last night. I mean, he looked great against some bigs who are inarguably superior.
Man,
so,
this guy does it all.
What can I
NBA
say?
Takes, Formula One takes. You
Loved
were
it.
Great on Is This Good last week.
Thank you
Talking
for saying
Cacio
that.
Talking Cacio Pepes.
Thank you for saying that.
Did you eat any pasta this week?
I haven't had. I've had a little bit of pizza.
A little pizza?
No
little pizza, no,
no
pasta.
Pasta. No
pasta. Pizza, no pasta. You can follow us at No Dunks Inc. INC. That's anywhere you get content on the internet. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, of course. If you've got questions for No Breaks, email them to us at nodunks@theathletic.com. Or like I said, you can tweet it to either one of us or No Dunks. We got No Dunks coming back tomorrow, 10 a.m. Eastern, to talk NBA. We've got Is This Good back tomorrow, 2 p.m. Eastern, with Skeets and special guest Amir Blumenfeld. And then tomorrow night, we got a big Survivor episode leading us to No Buffs on Thursday at 1 p.m. Eastern. Obviously, we'll do our No Dunks Daily Show as well. Anything else you want to say?
No, I think enjoy the race this weekend. You know, F1 sickos. It'll
yes,
be a fun one.
Sickos, Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us. And remember, be fast or be last. Thank you.